Thank you so much, Liz.
We're often advised that as a way to help ourselves feel and act more kindly, we should assume that the other person or group has positive intent. This is, in fact, in our own JRUUC Covenant of Right Relations, and it's part of the commitments we've all made about how we'll treat each other. What if a way to increase kindness and compassion in ourselves is not only to assume that others have positive intent, but also to assume suffering? I encountered this thought recently in an article on Medium.com, and it really rang a bell. It took me back to several experiences of my own, including one that had occurred just the day before. I was sitting one car back at a red light in a wide, busy intersection with multiple lanes, various turn arrows, pedestrian crosswalk lights, and general chaos. As the light changed and cars began to move through the intersection in another direction, a young person who appeared to be presenting strongly as male, so I'll use he pronouns, stepped into the traffic flow. He began to walk diagonally across from one corner of the broad intersection to the other, waving, holding up traffic, and putting himself in danger. I watched this unfold from my slightly removed red light idling spot. My first thought was, how can this guy be so arrogant? Who does he think he is, parading into traffic, making other people who have the right of way stop for him? And to top it all off, he's not even running or walking fast. He's just plodding along, making it that much worse for all the drivers who are held up, or those who are trying to avoid hitting him. Doesn't he consider anyone else? And the more or less inevitable, when you're my age, what's the matter with young people these days? As he progressed through the intersection, I noticed that the young man's walking gait was odd. Again, the first thought that arose was negative and possibly racist. Oh no, on top of it all, he's one of those people who wears his pants so low that he trips on them when he tries to walk. Really, why do some young men still feel the need to do that? I wasn't happy about these automatic reactions in myself. Like many of their kind, they seem to fly into the mind from outer space and without my consent. But I thought, hey, at least I noticed the automatic reactions, the automatic thoughts, and I don't have to believe them. Those thoughts are really not coming from me. I know they are part of the cultural conditioning I've experienced. They speak with the voices of others, not myself. Then I noticed that the young man was limping. He wasn't entangled in his pants. He was limping, hurt somehow, or disabled. And being a person who no longer walks all that well myself, I could empathize. Now, notice how my perspective began to change. I shifted from negative thoughts to compassionate ones. I viewed the same person, the same actions, in a different light. But I still could not understand why he felt the need to defy traffic rules and strike out diagonally across the intersection against the lights, especially given the fact that he couldn't move very fast. Why couldn't he just wait for the walk lights? And then I turned my head slightly, and I saw the bus that had pulled up to the bus stop on my side of the intersection. And I realized that's where he was headed. He was trying not to miss his bus. Having been a person who lived car-free in Madison till I was about 30, I could relate deeply to his need and his suffering. When you rely on buses for transportation, it can be hugely stressful. Even though there are schedules for the buses and apps where you can see where the bus is supposed to be at any given time, the bus's arrival at any stop can be unpredictable. And if you miss one bus at that stop and have to wait for the next one, it can be 20 to 30 minutes, sometimes as much as an hour at certain stops, before the next one comes along. Sure, you can try to wave down the bus, signal or call to other passengers who are getting on or off, but the driver is under no obligation to wait for you. And missing a bus can have serious consequences. I thought to myself, what if this guy's on his way to work? I know how plenty of employers treat late arrival. People can be reprimanded or even fired for being late. And missing a bus doesn't get them excused. Or what if he's trying to get to a medical appointment where, you know, if you're more than 15, 20 minutes late, they cancel you? What if he's trying urgently to get home because of an emergency? When I saw all the ways he could be suffering, my compassion deepened, and I viewed the whole situation differently. All in about a minute at a red light. The next day, I read the Medium article that I referred to earlier, where writer Jane Park says, "Assuming suffering goes a step beyond assuming positive intent." What if the person in front of you is doing the best they can, but in addition, they're struggling? What if the world isn't affording them any grace, so they feel like they have to steal it wherever they can? For a long time, when encountering a difficult situation with someone else, I've tried to stop and consider that they are human just like me. This is the foundation of my ethics. Seeing others as humans just like me is the basis of how I want to see and behave towards other people. I remind myself that the other person probably has some intent or purpose in their actions that's good in their eyes, even if not readily apparent to me, because I know that about my own motivations. And as author Deepak Chopra has said, avoiding a quick response is one of the first rules in moral thinking and acting. A core Buddhist teaching is that all humans inevitably suffer. It's one of the things we all have in common. And seeing this common humanity in suffering is the basis for compassion towards ourselves and towards others. So what if I were to shift my practice slightly, and in addition to assuming that there's positive intent in there somewhere, and that the other person is human just like me, consider that the other person could be suffering? As I saw with the limping young man who was defying traffic laws to catch the bus, what if I could learn to think this way in all troubling situations? Large or small, with another person or a group. It would very likely build my compassion muscles. It would certainly reduce my own emotional distress, and it probably would help me to choose wiser actions and responses. Now, I'm sure some of you are thinking, that's all well and good, but what if someone, especially a person in a position of power, is doing something truly harmful to others? Just as an example, certain political figures who start wars, berate others, lie, cheat, steal, foster insurrection, and generally just act in despicable ways. What about school shooters? or those who push for harmful policies against trans people? What about those in our own lives who are hurting us? Does trying to see their suffering mean that we excuse their behavior? No, it absolutely doesn't. There is a difference between compassion and excusing harm. What seeing the suffering does is to take us as individual humans out of our own judgmental anger response. As many of you probably know, that anger response shuts down our rational brains and pushes us into knee-jerk thoughts and actions. Witness the semi-racist thought that came up in my mind when I observed that young man. We still can and should speak up when there's harm and do what we can to counteract it. And if we're not in that narrow, non-seeing place of judgment, we can often come up with a much more effective and balanced response to the injustice. That's just the way the human brain works. We see a great deal of polarization and inability to work through conflict in much of the world today. It's my belief that failure to see the suffering in those whom we oppose is part of what drives that. People have reasons that they believe and act in harmful ways, and some type of suffering is often what drives their harmful actions. By seeing where they may be suffering, we can begin to communicate nonviolently. And perhaps, just perhaps, a dialogue might begin that in the end could cause the other person to cease their harmful actions or beliefs. We may be able to come up with solutions that address their needs as well as ours, and that therefore they can accept. I'm reminded of the story of the black man who, in the face of the infamous Charleston Unite the Right rally in 2017, resolved to speak to the white supremacists he encountered, not as an opposing force, but as human beings. To engage in careful dialogue, to understand why they felt the way they did. In the end, he finally changed the point of view of some of the white supremacists because they began to see him as a human being also, since he'd pay attention to where they were suffering. This kind of deep listening, seeing the suffering in another, helps us to see them as fellow humans and can enable us to engage with each other in more constructive and productive ways, even with those whose actions we oppose. And sometimes, as in the Charleston example, it can change minds in a way that seems miraculous. Putting it another way, if we're reacting with judgment and anger at another person, they're not going to listen to us. But if we can take that pause to consider where they may be suffering, we can shift ourselves into a mindset where real change becomes much more possible. Going back to what Deepak Chopra said, avoiding a quick response is one of the first rules in moral thinking and acting. By pausing to see a bigger picture, we can develop a more reasoned and creative response. Since my moment at the stoplight, I've begun to observe another benefit of seeing the suffering in another. When an interpersonal interaction hasn't gone well, when I feel personally wronged, harmed, angry, or hurt, seeing that suffering in that other person might have triggered their hurtful remarks or actions lessens my own pain. Especially when I hear angry words or curt responses, I can stop to think that they might have come from a place of suffering in that individual. This does a great deal to decrease my own thoughts of self-recrimination or self-blame. When I can see that the difficult interaction might be based as much in the other person's pain as in any words or actions of my own, it loosens the sense of failure. And I experience compassion for both myself and the other person. Then I can step much more easily into a place where repair is possible. So I've resolved to practice seeing the suffering in the other person every time I find judgment or anger arising. I'm going to steer towards those feelings of compassion instead and let them guide me to kinder, wiser thoughts and actions. It can be very calming, by the way, to consider this when someone cuts you off in traffic. Thank you, medium author Jane Park. And thank you, young person trying to catch the bus.